Hi and welcome everyone. I'm Stacey Barr, the Performance Measure Specialist of www.stacybarr.com. Welcome to my free November 2007 teleseminar on making performance dashboards useful and usable, which is an exclusive interview with information design expert, or as one of my subscribers said in a recent email, the dashboard god, Stephen View. The total call will be about an hour, and over this time I'm going to be asking Stephen some questions about the kinds of mistakes people typically make when they're designing performance dashboards and how to avoid them. Even if you're not using a dashboard or scorecard or some other electronic automated method of reporting your performance measures, you're still going to benefit from this call because Stephen's ideas are really, they're about the visual design of information and can apply just as well to more fundamental methods of reporting performance, even in Word documents and Excel spreadsheets. Now, I will introduce Stephen properly in just a few moments, but for those of you who are new to the Measurement Handy Hints e-zine or have joined this call through a friend or colleague, welcome. I hope you'll pick up on my passion for performance measurement during our call today. It's been my specialty for about 14 years now, helping people use performance measures in a practical way that focuses them on what matters most, and it stops them wasting time, money, effort, and energy reaching their business goals and targets. And now I'm really excited to introduce my guest today, Stephen View, founder and principal of Perceptual Edge, a California-based consultancy that was established to help organizations learn to design simple information displays for effective analysis and communication. Stephen has 25 years of experience as an innovator, consultant, and educator in the fields of business intelligence and information design, and currently he's focusing on data visualization techniques for making sense of and for communicating quantitative business information. Stephen publishes a monthly newsletter, the Visual Business Intelligence Newsletter, and speaks regularly at conferences, teaches in the MBA program at the University of California in Berkeley, and is author of two fantastic books. I own copies of each, Show Me the Numbers and Information Dashboard Design. Now, when I first read Information Dashboard Design, I was so pleased to know there was somebody out there who had similar ideas as I do about visually displaying quantitative information, and for me particularly, performance measures. And that's really what led to this teleseminar, in fact. But when I had the opportunity to meet Stephen in person last month, I've discovered he's also very charming, very intelligent, and very humble. So, Stephen, I'm very pleased to have you join us today.
And I am very pleased to be joining you. And I want to say to everyone who's listening in today that it's especially rewarding to me to be a part of this and to have met Stacey. She mentioned we just met recently, just last month, in fact, when I was visiting Australia, and I was very pleased to find that Stacey's interests are very complementary to my own. And very often when I'm doing work with customers to help them design dashboards, they often ask if I could also help them with determining the right things to be measuring as, you know, the first step in the dashboard design process. And that's not something that I focus in or on, and of course that's something that's very important to the process. So it was very exciting to me to discover someone that not only is focused on this, but obviously knows a great deal about this. And so I'm very pleased to be joining Stacey today.
Thanks, Stephen. It should be a wonderful collaboration. Stephen, to get stuck into this topic about really useful and usable dashboards, I wonder if it's useful to start with this idea about what is a dashboard, because so many people hear that term. They hear the term scorecard, all sorts of things like that. You know, business intelligence systems, data mining, all those sorts of terms kind of get lumped into the same box. So I'm wondering, can you kick us off maybe with a little clarification about what a dashboard actually is and how it compares to some of these other things?
Sure. I actually became very concerned about this question a few years ago when dashboards were becoming very popular, but nobody was taking the time to actually say what a dashboard was. And so back in March of 2004, I wrote an article in the magazine Intelligent Enterprise entitled Dashboard Confusion. And in that article, I was attempting to provide a working definition of a dashboard so that we could all know what we were talking about when we were discussing dashboards, and in particular, the proper way to design dashboards. And at the time, here's the definition that I proposed. A dashboard is a visual display of the most important information needed to achieve one or more objectives that has been consolidated and arranged on a single computer screen so it can be monitored and understood at a glance. And I think the key term of everything that's in that definition is the term monitored. Because in my mind, what a dashboard is a type of display that's used to keep track of or to monitor what's going on in the organization, what's going on in the business. And the term dashboard, people tend to use in a very, very loose way to refer to any computer-based display that includes multiple charts on it. And although there's lots of different reasons that you might want to put multiple charts on a screen-based display, how you design that display differs depending upon the purpose of it. When you use a display for monitoring what's going on in the organization, that requires a much different kind of design than a display that might be used for analyzing information in the organization, that is to do ad hoc analysis. And so that's why I'm very particular about the definition of a dashboard being a display that's used for monitoring, because that does require a very specific type of design, and that's what I focus on in my book.
And that's critically important in performance measurement, that emphasis on monitoring, because it's really where the rubber starts hitting the road with measures. It's that first interaction you'll have with the data and the story that your measures are trying to tell you. Yeah, sure, getting into the nitty-gritty behind what's going on with those measures, analyzing trends, is sort of going into that other part that you were talking about, Stephen, about the analytical side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the monitoring is really our first interaction with our measures.
Well, certainly the first and user interaction with the numbers, often, yes.
Absolutely. Now, before we continue on, I should make a mention, and as a reminder to everybody who's listening in, is that you can download a PDF that Stephen's kindly made available for us on the webcast page, which is www.stacybarr.com/freeteleseminarplayer. That's freeteleseminarplayer.htm. That's all one word. And just scrolling down a little bit, you'll be able to download the PDF. And the definition, Stephen, that you just gave us, I think that's on page 7 of that PDF.
Yes, it is.
And
what I've tried to do in this document is to provide a lot of the highlights that can be found in my book, Information Dashboard Design, and also to try to anticipate some of the questions you'd be asking, Stacey, and provide some illustrations of some of the things that I'll be talking about. I didn't anticipate everything that you ended up asking. You're a very wonderful advocate for your listeners in that you've asked me about just about everything. And I haven't prepared to illustrate my answers to everything. I want there to be some reason to actually buy the book, but the PDF does contain a lot of information beyond what we'll talk about today.
That's fantastic. So the PDF is a good starting point. It will illustrate what we talk about today. But, Stephen, just so that you know, I've put a link to the book on this on the webcast page as well. So if anyone wants to just jump straight to the real source, they can do that pretty easily.
There you go. And I should mention, Stacey, that I was just reviewing your e-book also regarding performance measures, and just to get a little bit more familiar with your work, and I noticed that in the back, in the references section, neither one of my books are listed yet. I'm sure that will be corrected by the end of this broadcast, though.
Absolutely. Edition 4 of that e-book is going to come out very, very quickly.
Okay.
That was written originally about 10 years ago, so it's old, but I just couldn't believe the similarity. It's why I was attracted to your book, Stephen. It's just the principles that come through in information dashboard design are so similar to the principles I've been sharing with my clients for many years.
Well, so everybody now knows how much we like each other, so
let's
move on.
Well, let's move on. Okay, now, really, the essence for today's call, and I thought a good place to sort of start getting you talking about these things, Stephen, is addressing some of the mistakes, the most common mistakes people make that you do talk about in the book, Information Dashboard Design. Now, one practice that I see time and again in dashboards and in other manually produced reports is often that they're only one, two, maybe three numbers provided for any performance measure. And usually it's, you know, this month compared to last month and a year-to-date or target figure. And it drives me crazy because as you know, I have a statistical background, I really value and appreciate the power of showing enough historical data for meaningful trend analysis. And you mentioned as one of the common mistakes with dashboards is supplying inadequate context for data. Stephen, what does this mean and what should we be doing about it?
So what is very typical, I think, in dashboard displays is displaying data through these gauges and meters that have become so popular on dashboards. And actually, I find that the vast majority of those gauges and meters that are typical don't even display as much as you were just saying isn't enough, and that is many of them will just display a number without giving you any sense of how that compares to something in order to make it meaningful, such as compared to a target or maybe where we were last year on the same date or something like that. And so most of these displays don't even do that good a job. I agree with you that even that's not enough, because what you want to do ideally on a dashboard so that people can really make use of the information is to give enough context around any measure that you're reporting that people can really interpret the meaning of that and interpret its meaning in terms of performance. Are we doing well? Are we not doing well? How well or how poorly are we doing? And a very important question, I think, is what has led to what's happening today? And in fact, if you're following along on the PDF, these are questions that I've listed on page 20 of the PDF, and then on the page prior to that, on page 19, I have examples of what meters generally look like or gauges generally look like on dashboards, and they just almost never give enough context around the measure, around the data, to allow people to really make good use of that data. And it's funny, I recently was critiquing a particular software package that originally was designed for medical doctors to be able to respond in urgent care situations in order to diagnose the problem that a patient has. And so this software was designed to provide doctors with all the information on a single screen that they might need to look at. But none of this information provided any history. It was only giving measures of the person's health as of right now, as of today, and it wasn't taking history into account. And I can't imagine a doctor making a diagnosis about what's going on with a patient today without seeing those various measures of the person's health in context of history. What has gone on before? What is leading up to today? What is the basic trend? And so forth. And you just can't do that without historical information. And that doesn't mean that a dashboard needs to have extensive line charts and so forth that give all the details regarding history, but it ought to give a sense of history in a very, very brief yet meaningful way. And one of the things that I often use on dashboards to do that is an invention by Edward Tufte, another data visualization expert. And Tufte created this thing called a spark line. And a spark line is just like the line on a line graph, except without the axes, without the scales. So they're really all you're looking at is kind of an enhanced trend arrow. But rather than a trend arrow, which tells you it's simply that it's going up or down, this spark line actually shows you the pattern of change over time. And so you get a lot more of a rich sense of what's going on than a simple trend arrow would give. So, yes, history is the type of context that we need on a dashboard in order to measure performance effectively.
That spark line sounds fantastic. I mean, because really, that pattern over time, your baseline for comparison is the horizontal. You don't necessarily need to have all that other detail around the chart just to understand the pattern. And it's like you say, it's not just a linear increasing or decreasing pattern. Sometimes you can have little blips. Sometimes you can have step changes
Exactly.
And that's important context.
Exactly. For instance, you might have a trend arrow that says sales are going up. But what does that mean exactly on a dashboard if you have an upward pointing trend arrow? Sales are going up compared to when in the past? It could have been that overall across the course of the month sales are going down, but just since yesterday they popped up. And so the trend arrow doesn't give you enough information.
Absolutely. Certainly not enough information to know what your next question should be or how to delve down and do that cause analysis.
Exactly.
Stephen, one of my bugbears about performance reports is that they're often very, very much filled with numbers. And when people are using the reports, they're focusing too much on the detail of the numbers and not enough on the patterns and the story that the numbers are trying to sell, trying to tell. And I believe one of the common mistakes you speak of also relates to this, and that's this obsession with displaying excessive detail or precision in reports.
Right. There, of course, are times when very precise numbers are necessary for certain tasks. An accountant that is trying to close the books at the end of the month is looking at numbers down to the cents, and that level of precision is appropriate for that particular task. But if you're monitoring performance and trying to do so rapidly, that level of precision isn't what you need. You need to have a basic sense of how are we doing compared to how we ought to be doing. And so you're looking for basic comparisons of how we're doing compared to targets and compared to the past and so forth. And you don't need a high level of precision necessarily to get a sense of how you're doing. And what, you know, yet I've seen a lot of dashboards that are extremely text heavy in that they're just filled with precise numbers when those precise numbers may only be necessary on occasion when you're really trying to drill down into the details of something. But for just monitoring, you need much less precision. And perhaps when you are having to report the actual numeric precision of something, you need to really think about what level of precision is appropriate for my audience to do this particular task. And for basic monitoring, maybe you don't need to carry the values down to 10 decimal places worth of precision. Maybe rounding it to the nearest thousands or something like that would be appropriate for the task and would actually save the person doing the monitoring a lot of time by not having to wade through levels of precision that don't really add any value to the task.
Exactly. And this is something that we learned back in my statistical days. We knew it, and it was a very, very useful thing to know is that the level of precision in the data that you need for trend analysis is far, 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 far less than the precision you need to be able to draw a conclusion between the difference between two points. So that trend over time information is primarily the stuff that we really want. The change over time is primarily the stuff that we want to know about our performance measures. When did performance get better? When did it get worse? How much better did it get? How much worse did it get? And to know those things in a fairly general sense is far more valuable than to put all that effort into the precision, like you say. And people argue over data quality and data integrity and refuse to use their measures because it's not accurate to the tenth decimal place. But forget that idea that it's the trend, the pattern information that's really important.
Right.
Stephen, something I usually make a big deal out of is my disdain for pie charts. I personally believe they're useless, actually, when it comes to conveying performance information. But you know this too, they proliferate annual reports and dashboards and all sorts of things. And I'm sure people only use them because they can make them look pretty and because you can do cool things like make the little slices separate out from the pie and change the colours and all that sort of thing. And maybe it's because, I don't know, circles are friendlier than rectangles. I'm not sure, but I do know that choosing appropriate methods for displaying performance measures isn't just about taste. This is a common mistake, isn't it, Stephen?
It is, in my opinion. And you may know, Stacey, that I have particular disdain for pie charts because what we're trying to get, the information we're trying to get from the pie chart, they tend to not work very well. I actually have just recently, about 2 months ago, wrote a very extensive article about pie charts called Save the Pies for Dessert. And that article really goes over everything about pie charts, how they work, what they do all right, the many things that they don't do very well, and what the alternatives are to pie charts that actually work much more effectively. And so I would recommend to anybody who is interested in this particular topic to maybe go out to my website at perceptualedge.com and go to the library page and look for that article because I think you'll find it very useful. If you're following along on the PDF that's been supplied with this teleseminar, you might want to look at page 21 on that, because I give an example of what I consider to be a typical example of choosing inappropriate display media on a dashboard. And at the top of that page, you see a pie chart. And if you happen to have that in front of you and looking at this particular pie chart, if you were just looking at the picture formed by the pie, the basic message seems to be that all the parts are about the same. But if you then focus in on the numbers, the values that are associated with each of those slices of the pie, you see that there are actually quite significant differences between those values. And so the picture itself is not conveying the message that's in the data itself. And if you're going to use a picture to display data, you do so because the picture tells something, tells part of the data's story that you can't get from a simple table of the same values. And here's a case where, you know, pie charts often give a picture that actually don't tell us anything beyond what we would learn from just looking at the numbers in a table. And in fact, they make it harder to get the data because you're searching around the edges of the pie to try to see the numbers and to figure out how those numbers compare, when you ought to be able to just look at the picture to get the information. So in this case, I'm not saying that you throw the pie out and replace it with a table on a dashboard. That's not the right solution. I think you just replace it with a better visualization of the data, that is, a better graphical representation of the data, such as a bar chart, where it's much easier to compare the links of the various bars to one another in order to compare the values to one another. And so that's, I think, probably the most common example of choosing ways of displaying data that actually don't communicate the truth about the data very effectively. And there's lots of other examples like that, but this is probably the most egregious one.
Definitely. I find it also with choosing bar charts to display time series data.
Right.
Rather than a line chart. That's
right.
That's something that happens a lot, because in performance measurement, as I suggested before, it's the patterns through time that we're usually most interested in.
Right.
And bar charts end up looking like mountain ranges, and
yeah,
it's very difficult to pick up the trends as easily as a line chart would do it.
And that's an experiment that anybody can very easily do. Just take any data that you want to look at in terms of how it changes through time and display it in one case as a line chart, in one case as a bar chart. And if you look at those two different pictures, you'll see that the line graph does a much better job of showing you the pattern of change through time. The bars just don't do that as effectively. What bars do really effectively is making it easy for you to compare the magnitude of one value to another. And so if you're looking at the difference between actual expenses and budgeted expenses in given months, having actual bar and a budget bar side by side within each month, that works really well for comparing actual to budget, better than a line graph would do. But if you want to look at the pattern of change through time, lines are a much, much better way of representing that.
Agreed. Now, but even though, once we've made this wiser decision about the right type of chart that we use for our measures, it doesn't end there, does it, Stephen? I mean, even if a horizontal bar chart is the best way to display a particular measure or a particular piece of information, we can still do all kinds of things to get in the way of that bar chart doing its job, can't we?
Right, right. So, yes, the next step is not beyond choosing the appropriate medium of display is to design the display of that graph in a way that really highlights the story you're trying to tell with the data. And perhaps one example I can use to illustrate that without having to look at a picture on the screen here is, think about that example I was just giving a moment ago, where you want to look at the difference between actual expenses and the budgeted expenses. And so how we typically do that would be to have one set of bars represent the actuals and one set of bars representing the budget. But if you really want to focus on the variance of actual to budget, having a set of bars for each of those series is not the most effective way of doing that. What you really want to do is simply have a graph that displays the difference between the two, the difference between actual and budget as maybe a single set of bars or a single line on the graph of this time series data, because that's, you know, what you would be trying to calculate by trying to see the difference between the actual and the budget bars if you graphed them as separate sets of bars. And so we need to think about, how are people going to actually use this data? What is it that they need to see in the data? And what's the most direct way in which we can present that data to them and then design the graph to very directly communicate that information?
So this is a really important thing to do. I mean, it's one thing to have a set of performance measures, but before you start reporting them, before you start sticking them in a dashboard or a graph, you really have to be very clear about what questions you're hoping that display of information is going to answer for you, so that you can choose the right display, you can choose the right way to put that information out there. And I think a lot of people don't do that. They, you know, they're flat out putting the amount of thought they need to into coming up with meaningful measures, let alone going to the next step and coming up with the questions that they really have those measures there to answer in the first place.
Right, and that really gets into the kind of work that you do, Stacey, is that, you know, my work where I'm helping people design dashboard displays, that assumes that people already know not only what the appropriate measures are, but how people use those measures to assess the performance of the organization. What is it that they're trying to get from that information? What questions, as you say, are they trying to answer with that information? And unless you have that understanding, you won't know how to display the data in an effective way to people. So a lot of work needs to go up front in determining the measures and exactly, you know, how they, what they need to communicate before you know how to display them appropriately.
It reminds me of quite a few years ago now, actually. It was a really unique opportunity to come into an organization and start working with them on performance measures just at the point in time when they had decided to throw out a dashboard system, an information system that they'd had developed that cost them, I think, around about $2 million.
Right.
And they were throwing it out because all of the users were saying, this isn't answering our questions, it doesn't have the information in it that we want. But those users originally were asked for, by the team that developed it, how do you want this information displayed, you know, getting into colors and getting into layout and not
right.
really getting to where they really should have started, which is what questions matter.
Exactly,
and
one of the, if any of you who are listening that have the responsibility of building dashboard displays, let me recommend that the last thing you ever want to do is, based on what people say they want to measure, is to then go out and ask them, how would you like me to design the dashboard? What would you like it to look like? You know, what kind of gauges and so forth do you want me to use on the screen? Because people that know what they want to measure and how they use that information to do their work don't necessarily know the most effective ways of displaying that information. We have, as dashboard designers and so forth, we have some responsibility to learn about the most effective ways to display data and bring that expertise to the process. And if they say, well, I want to, you know, see all this data in pie charts or gauges, it's our responsibility to push back a little bit and say, you know what, you worry about telling me what you need to measure and let me make the recommendations as to how to display that data. And of course, you'll have plenty of opportunity to give me input to let me know whether it's working for you or not, but let's not start with how it ought to look. Let's start with what it ought to say.
Perfect. I just can't believe that we don't do that already, but I guess with technology and what's possible, we can easily get carried away with the whiz-bangery.
Absolutely.
Stephen, the visual comparisons that graphs show us, I'd say that they're probably the essence of the value of a graph. That, and if the integrity of those comparisons isn't preserved, then being misled by a dashboard or a graph is being misled as a certainty, basically, in that situation. So, Stephen, what are some of the common mistakes people make when they're encoding their data inaccurately in their graphs? Where what are some of the things that they do that risk the graph completely misleading the users?
There's one example that comes to mind is the most common mistake that people make that causes the graph to not communicate the data accurately. And that mistake is that whenever you're using a bar chart, that is, you're encoding values by using bars, unless you start the quantitative scale at zero, the comparative heights or lengths of the bars do not match the values that they're intended to encode. And so not all graphs have to have quantitative scales that start at zero necessarily, but all graphs that use bars do, because that's the only way the relative lengths or heights of the bars are going to accurately encode the relative differences of those values. And so definitely if you're, you know, comparing or looking at sales through time or looking at expenses by department or something like that, and you're using bars to encode that data, make sure that you start your scale at zero so that people can just look at the picture, just look at those bars and compare their heights or lengths and have an accurate understanding of what those differences in values are. So start the scale at zero for bars at least.
It's amazing how often that doesn't happen. But I guess some people are using performance measures and graphs to inform their decision-making, and others are probably using them to press a particular point of view, and they can manipulate the heights of the bars to achieve that. There was a really, I'm not sure if you've come across this book, Stephen, How to Lie with Statistics.
Absolutely, yes.
Who wrote that one?
How to Lie with Statistics actually was written, I believe, by Daryl Huff back in 1954, the year that I was...
Ago.
What? Excuse me?
Oh, sorry.
what were you saying?
Nothing. keep going, Stephen.
Now, 1954, which is the year that I was born, and so, you know, for a long time, people have been aware of this problem of intentional manipulation of a data display in order to mislead people about what the actual truth is in the data. I think that problem still exists today, of course, but I think that there's a greater problem that many of us suffer from, and that is that we unintentionally mislead people about the truth in the data simply because we don't know some of these basic rules, such as the one I just talked about, and that is when you use bars to encode the data, you have to start the scale at zero. And so we don't want to be misleading. None of us that are creating displays want to intentionally give people a misrepresentation of the truth. And there are the rules that are required to tell the truth in graphs are very, very easy to learn. It's just a matter of having the right resources to learn them effectively, such as my book, Show Me the Numbers.
Absolutely. There's another thing that I see people doing, which is probably slightly more statistical, but Microsoft Excel gives you the ability to do it. So it's something I think if the tool's put in your hand, you really need to make sure you understand how to use it, and that is trend lines. Putting linear trend lines through a time series and just assuming, because Microsoft Excel can compute the trend line and draw it on the graph for you, that it actually has meaning. And
Right. More
often than not, that trend line is misleading you. It's summarizing, it's telling you there's a pattern in the data that may very well not be there at all.
Right, and that's a good example of a case where functionality has been provided, which can be powerful if you know how to use it and when to use it. But if you don't have that understanding, you can actually use it in very misleading ways. And applying trend lines to time series data is one of those examples, I think. It takes a little bit of study to figure out how to use those things appropriately. It's unfortunate. I think that software like Excel has responsibility of really putting tools in the hands of people along with the appropriate guidance to use these things effectively. But, of course, that guidance does not exist in the software. And often if you do the things that the software encourages you to do, oftentimes you end up doing things inappropriately, doing things that don't actually work effectively. And a good example of that is just take the defaults, the visual defaults of Excel charts. They're horrible.
Yeah.
the starting point of any one of those graphs generally is a very poor graph design. Now, you can fix those defaults so that you can display the data quite effectively, but the defaults ought to be designed to do that. You may take that part of the effort out of it, but most software, and there are some exceptions to this gladly, but most software does not do a good job of guiding you to display data effectively.
No, and I guess it's the same whether it's Excel or a dashboard application. They do a good job at guiding you how to use the tools and the cool bits and pieces of the software, but not to understand how to use those bits and pieces to really achieve the ultimate purpose of answering your questions.
Well, I'll admit that they do a better job of teaching you how to use the software than they do about teaching you, you know, the skills are required to use the software effectively. But I would argue that even in terms of teaching you how to use the software effectively, they don't do a particularly good job.
It's a wonder there's so many of them around that are so successful. But again, it's, you know, if an audience doesn't know any better, if the users don't know any better, then there's nothing else we can expect. So, and I think I read somewhere, Stephen, you might have mentioned this at some point, I can't recall exactly where, that really part of what you've seen your role in is being able to make some of these concepts and principles a lot simpler to grasp and to help people just become aware of them.
Right.
And through that, help them make some better decisions about using these tools.
Yes, and as people's awareness of these simple practices and simple principles is heightened, people will start pushing back on the vendors, of course, to design their software in ways that makes it easier to do things well. But that turnaround will take place gradually, not overnight.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's go on and look at a couple of the common mistakes, Stephen. There's one thing that I've seen quite a few people do in an effort to make their reports more simple is they try to fit all of the information onto a single page or onto a single screen, and they, you know, they'll do things like make the graphs smaller and squeeze them together in a grid, and really what you end up with is looking at this great big cluttered and overwhelming monstrosity. Is this a problem that you've seen, Stephen?
It is a problem that I've seen, but actually it generally isn't related to the volume of data that they're trying to show. It's more related to the way that they're designing the display. For instance, I have seen extremely cluttered dashboards that show almost no data at all. If you really pick out the data, there's very little data there, yet visually the dashboard looks full and cluttered. Whereas I've also seen and have designed on my own dashboards that show an enormous amount of data on a single screen and don't look cluttered because the design principles that are being followed are, you know, creating a design that is not visually overwhelming and that is very rich in terms of the information that it displays. And that really gets into a level of understanding visual design that goes beyond what we could obviously talk about in a teleseminar like this. And for that level of skill, I would really point you to a resource like my book, Information Dashboard Design, because in addition to pointing out a lot of the common problems in the visual design of dashboards, I, of course, want to take you to the next step, and that is how to do it right. And the principles that are required are just not that hard to learn, but until somebody points them out to you, they're not necessarily intuitive either. And so there really is there are good ways of putting a lot of information on a single screen without the end result being a very cluttered and confusing display. And there actually are advantages to putting a lot of information on the single screen. One of the common mistakes that I've seen is that dashboards will take all the information that people ought to see together because they need to make connections between the data. They need to make comparisons between the data, and they need to get a big picture that requires that they see all these pieces at once. And they'll take that information and split it across many screens or require that you scroll around to see all of that. And one of the problems that we all struggle with is the limitation of short-term memory, in that if it's not in front of our eyes right now, we will not remember what we were looking at a moment ago, and we cannot make those comparisons. So there's real value and putting a lot of information out, laid out within iSpan for people to make those comparisons and see those connections. But obviously, to do that effectively, you have to be able to design a display that's very clean and yet rich in information. And so generally that requires a design aesthetic that some people would consider a minimalist aesthetic, and that is that, you know, really that dashboard is completely made up of data displayed in a pleasing way, and there is no room for visual fluff. There's no room for decoration. There's no room for a single line or a dot or an icon or whatever that doesn't convey useful information.
That's a good point. And I think Edward Tufte referred to this as the data ink ratio. There should be no ink used on a page which doesn't convey information that's valuable. And I guess the pixel to information ratio might be.
Yeah, that's how I phrase it. And actually, Tufte didn't say there should be no ink that doesn't convey information. But basically what he says is that any ink that doesn't display actual data that's on the page, and examples might be like the axis lines on a graph, if it serves a useful purpose, if it makes it easier to understand the data, such as those axis lines do, you don't throw it out in that case. You don't eliminate it. But what you do is you subdue it visually so that it doesn't become the prominent thing that people's eyes are drawn to, because it's just playing a supporting role. You don't want it to be featured in the data. But certainly any ink on the page or pixels on the screen that don't convey data and they aren't necessary in order to communicate what's important in the data, you ought to just throw it out, because there's no room for fluff that people's eyes need to wade through if it's unnecessary.
I'm wondering if because I'm just looking through your PDF, Stephen, and looking at pages 23 and 24, and the contrast between the two is amazing. The one on 24 is probably what not to do.
Yeah, the image on page 24 of the PDF is illustrating one of the common mistakes I see, and that is that people design dashboards that don't end up featuring what's most important in the data. And not all data that belongs on a dashboard is of equal importance. At any one moment when you're monitoring a dashboard, some things may need more of your attention than other things. Perhaps something's going wrong and you need to notice that on the dashboard. Well, if everything on the dashboard looks equally prominent and everything pops out and jumps out at you, then the end result is that nothing is featured in the display. And so in order to effectively feature particular things on the dashboard that you want people to be sure and notice, you generally want to go for a very subdued overall design, not a lot of color and so forth, not a lot of flash, so that the things that you want to stand out, you can make stand out by adding some of the additional features, like a splash of color in the form of a little icon next to the major, or something like that to really make it pop out, to draw people's eyes to that particular part of the display. If you highlight everything, nothing ends up being highlighted.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm illustrating on 24. Now, back on 23, as you mentioned, that was just an example of some ways in which data can be displayed very richly, but yet in a very small amount of space, in a way where people's eyes really are drawn to what matters in the display. And in that particular example on page 23, you can imagine that being maybe just a sixth of the overall dashboard, if you want to think in terms of the full volume of information that might be on this display. So that's not at all a full dashboard. That could be just a very tiny part of it, and yet it's not going to end up looking cluttered or overwhelming because it's displayed in an appropriate way.
One of the, and incidentally, for those of you who don't have the PDF in front of you right away, it'd be worthwhile getting it, because this also shows you the use of spark lines, which, Stephen, you mentioned earlier.
Right.
One of the processes that I get my clients to go through as they're designing their performance measures is to explore the relationships that measures have to each other. They might pick up cause-effect relationships between performance measures, or they might pick up companion relationships where two performance measures really need to get reported together because together they tell the story and separately they don't.
Right.
And to know those relationships between your measures gives you clues about how to chunk your information into dashboards, I guess.
Yes.
So that page 23 is a good example of how you could take a collection of related performance measures and stick them together on a page and be able to really get the story out of the set of performance measures as opposed to taking that linear approach that I see to happen too often where just, you know, the agenda is go through performance measure number one, okay, that one's done, now performance measure number
right.
two, okay, that one's done. This way you're sort of looking more at the holistic story.
Exactly. And it's definitely one of the things that you need to consider during the dashboard design process is of all the information that you want to display on the dashboard, what pieces of information need to be seen together because they are part of a group, because they need to be compared to one another or whatever. And that is one of the questions that will help you figure out how to arrange the data on the dashboard, because it's not a matter of just kind of throwing things onto the screen wherever you can get them to fit, because that's not going to match how people use the data. You need to think about the logical groups that will make sense to people and the kind of comparisons and connections that people will be looking for, and then to try to arrange the data in a way that makes those groupings and those comparisons very easy to see.
That's what it comes down to, making the comparisons in the information very easy to see. I'm just looking at some of the comments people are coming in. Lots of hellos. Who have we got? We've got some people from Newcastle in Australia, from Colorado, Atlanta, Georgia, Toowoomba, which is just sort of west of Brisbane. People from Brisbane, so we've got people from all over. Thanks to those of you who have Anyapoon, which is further north along the Queensland coast. Thanks to all of you who have popped in and said hello. I'm looking at the time, Stephen. I'm thinking now might be a good time to start wrapping up a little bit and giving people an opportunity to think about what questions they might want to ask before we end the call.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that we could maybe, Stephen, you could spend just a few minutes just sharing some of the most practical tips that people might be able to start doing immediately after this call to improve the way they're currently displaying their performance measures and other information. Just some of the tips that you find are maybe the easiest to implement straight away, or the first things that you generally encourage your clients to think about.
Okay. Well, I'll throw out a couple things, and obviously there's a lot more to be said, but I'll kind of use these as teasers. And so one of the things that I find that's a common problem in many dashboards is that because dashboards tend to be very visual in nature, people think that the way to enhance a visual display is to put lots of color on it. And that actually can end up undermining the effectiveness of the dashboard to communicate information. And if you do have the PDF and you're kind of following along it, looking at some of these examples, if you look at page 26 of the PDF, I'm talking about the fact that people often misuse and overuse color in dashboard displays. And this particular page shows a bar chart where every bar in the bar chart is a different color. Well, there's two problems with that, especially on a dashboard. One problem is that whenever you introduce a visual difference in the display, it ought to correspond to an actual difference in the data. So in this case, every bar has a different color, and yet we don't need those different colors. There's nothing in the data that corresponds to those differences of colors. We already know what the bars represent because they're labeled right along the axis, and yet our eyes are drawn to these differences of color, which suggests that there's some meaning encoded in those color differences, but yet in this particular example, those color differences are completely gratuitous. They don't mean anything. And so don't waste people's time by introducing visual differences in a dashboard display that don't correspond to actual differences in the data. The other problem that results from using color in this gratuitous way is that it just makes the dashboard display overly colorful, which makes it visually overwhelming, especially if you use lots of bright colors. And also it undermines the ability of color to be used in a meaningful way. One of the most powerful things that you can do with color on a dashboard is use it to draw people's attention to particular parts of the dashboard that they need to focus on. If you use mostly neutral colors like grays and so forth for most of the data, and then throw splashes of color right next to the items that most need to be featured in the dashboard, such as like a little red icon right next to any particular measures that where something's going wrong or there's a particularly good opportunity there where people need to focus on it, that works quite powerfully. But as you see illustrated on page 28 of the PDF, if you have that, if you overuse color, where you got lots of colors everywhere, you can't use it effectively to draw people's attention to particular parts of the dashboard. And so that's one of the practical tips I want to share today. I think probably another one that is also related to a common mistake is that you just don't want to take this dashboard metaphor too far. A lot of people think, okay, dashboard, why don't I make it look like the actual dashboard of a car? And that's really where this whole concept of the circular gauge or meter that looks like a speedometer or something, or like a fuel gauge in a car, that's where that comes from, is extending this metaphor of the car dashboard. Well, you don't want to do that because you end up using or creating the dashboard, which is supposed to convey business information. You're creating a dashboard that looks like something it's not. This is not a car that we're driving. This is the business that we're monitoring. And rather than trying to make that business dashboard look like the dashboard of a car, we ought to design it in a way where each piece of information is being displayed in the most effective way possible, and that the overall display is using the best of visual design to tell a really rich and important story. And so don't take that metaphor too far. Don't try to make the dashboard look like something that it really isn't. Think about how people use the information, what they need from the information, and the best possible way to design that display so they can get that information with very little effort and very, very quickly. So those are a couple of quick tips I'll throw out.
Very practical tips. Now, we might start taking a few questions. I've already got one that's popped through from Kanina in Brisbane, who's listening via webcast.
Okay.
Kanina's question, Stephen, is there any point where a once-off data point as opposed to trend data is appropriate, and, for example, a year-to-date operating result, or should this also be shown over time? I certainly have some ideas about that, Stephen, but please go ahead if you
want. Well, actually, no, I want to hear your response to that, Stacey. Why don't you start?
I don't believe that a single point of data is ever appropriate if you're using that data for performance monitoring or assessing the performance of your business or your company. Meaning comes from comparison, and if you want to get some kind of meaning out of the data, you need to have some kind of comparison. Stephen, I think it links a little bit back to what we were talking about earlier about
right.
context. And the bare minimum that you would want to have is, you know, if it's a year-to-date result, as a bare minimum, compare that year-to-date result with a target of, you know, if this
yes.
is where we are now, where did we at least hope or intend to be here? So as a bare minimum, that kind of comparison. Or another kind of comparison might be, well, if this is the year-to-date now, how does that compare to where we might have been last year or the year before?
Right.
That said, I'm an advocate for using as much historical data as you can, because differences between two points don't tell you patterns.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you expressed that very well, and I'm right on board with what you just said, is numbers by themselves don't really tell us very much. We don't know how to interpret those numbers. We don't know the meaning of those numbers without making comparisons. And almost always when you're trying to understand a number, the question you ask is, compared to what? It's through that comparison that number comes to life for you.
Absolutely. I'm going to unmute the call, Stephen, and see if we have anybody on the line that wants to ask a question. And in the meantime, if you, anyone else listening via webcast, if you've got a question that you want to start typing in, that would be great, or some feedback or something that you'd like to share. But let me unmute just now. Lovely. I'm not sure if we have anyone on the line. Does anybody have a question? Just say your name if you do. We might have an exclusively webinar a session today. So I'll see if any more questions are coming through from people. And as I was saying to you, Stephen, before we started the call today, this new teleseminar webinar system I'm using, the dashboard is quite good, but I have to admit I'm still getting used to how it operates.
Right. So you will discover after the teleseminar that there were actually, 500 people out there shouting their questions into the phone and you couldn't hear them.
And couldn't. Yeah. Here we go. Neil from Pittsburgh. What's PA stand for in the U.S.? Stephen, where's Pittsburgh?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay. So Neil from Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania is asking, in a manufacturing environment, how many measurements would you typically use on a dashboard?
You know, there is no one right answer to that question because it depends on who you're trying to support with the use of that dashboard. In a manufacturing environment, various people have different jobs that they need to perform, and every one of those people who relies on information to do their job could potentially have their own custom dashboard for doing what it is that they need to do. And so there isn't a one right answer for that. What you need to do is find out what are the particular information monitoring needs of a particular person or a particular group of people that do the same kind of work. What is it in the manufacturing process, for instance, do they need to monitor? Do they need to keep an overview of in order to monitor the performance of the organization and then design a display that provides them with that information? And obviously in a manufacturing environment, you are often managing or monitoring things like, are we keeping up with the demand, or are there defects in the manufacturing process that exceed the acceptable level of defects and things like that. But there's a whole host of potential metrics that you might want to monitor depending upon the nature of the job you're trying to support. So I wish I could be more definitive, but I can't honestly give you a definitive answer without understanding the exact needs of your particular audience.
My suggestion also, in addition to everything you've just said, Stephen, is that for Neil, in a manufacturing environment, in any kind of business environment, as Stephen suggested, different parts of the organization or the business will have their own dashboards. Very important to keep in mind that any one person really can only effectively focus on 5 to 7 things at any one time. So keep the number of measures for any one person to monitor down to a nice essential minimum to know what the priorities are.
I would actually play devil's advocate with that a little bit, Stacey, because I think that general rule of thumb doesn't always apply. And I think that when data is presented properly, obviously let's take any dashboard that someone may be monitoring. All that data there, they don't have to monitor all that information in great detail. And so out of 50 measures that you might need to kind of keep in touch with at any one time, you would only need to focus on a handful of those. And so I would think it would be inappropriate to limit the total information on a dashboard to something like 4 or 5 measures. I think that people are capable of processing much richer displays than that. They're certainly not capable of maintaining, holding all that information at once at any one time, but that's not what's required. You're always focusing in on individual parts of it, and we ought to make it easy for people to be able to easily track and focus in on lots more than just 4 or 5 pieces of information. At least that's my opinion.
Maybe merging our two ideas together, Stephen, we could come up with something that's along the lines of know what your priorities are and use those handful of priorities as the starting point for looking at your dashboard, but then appreciate that you can have a raft of measures sitting behind those for drilling down into, for analyzing, for looking for causes, for explaining patterns and trends that you're seeing in the priority measures.
Maybe that'll be our next book, Stacey, the one we collaborate on.
Wow, that'd be great. But rather than indulge me in my desire to become an author, I'll see what Eric from Atlanta wants to ask. Eric, you're asking, since you developed it, and Stephen, I'm assuming Eric's talking to you here, since you developed it, could you explain your reasons for coming up with the bullet graph versus the gauge?
So, yes, the bullet graph is a little invention of mine, and I designed that specifically to meet a particular need, and that is that when I looked at most dashboards that were common in the marketplace, I found the prevalence of these circular gauges on dashboards. And two things struck me about the circular gauges. One is that they tended to not display very much information. In other words, they were not a rich data display. And second, that they took up way too much space to convey the information that they did convey. And so I thought that, especially because of that space issue, that we ought to come up with a better way of telling the same information that you would tell using a gauge, which is typically some prominent measure, some primary measure, compared to one or more things in the context of qualitative states, such as good, satisfactory, bad, and so forth, and with the scale on it so that you could see not just that things are going well, but how well are they going, and how far in advance of target or below target or whatever. In other words, have that level of precision in interpreting that, but in a way that doesn't take up a lot of space. And so my bullet graph was a linear display, a very simple linear graph that is just really, it's a simplified version of a bar chart with a single bar that compares that measure to something like a target or where we were last year, and has background fill colors such as various intensities of gray to create sections of good, bad, satisfactory, and so forth, which can be read very, very rapidly, and yet it doesn't take up a lot of space. And so that's what I was trying to accomplish, is I was trying to do what the vendors were not doing, and that is step back and ask, how can we best display data on a dashboard? Well, one of the truths about a dashboard is you're limited in the amount of space that is available on a screen, and so how can we display data richly without taking up a lot of space? Thus, I designed the bullet graph.
And is that the graph that we see on page 28 in the PDF?
That is the graph that we see on page 28, especially in the lower right-hand side.
The lower right one.
Of that,
overusing color.
Yeah, you see versions of bullet graphs that I consider to be more properly designed, in that the differences between three different intensities of gray to show bad, satisfactory, and good performance, that can be seen easily by anyone, even people who are colorblind. Whereas the difference between red and green is indistinguishable by 10% of males and 1% of females who are colorblind. And so that's one of the problems I'm trying to solve with that particular design. And the other problem, of course, is I'm trying to keep the use of color to a minimum so that the display doesn't become visually overwhelming.
Great. Now, Lynn from Melbourne has a question. Stephen, we're going over time. Are you okay with this? Or are you?
I'm fine.
You are? Lovely.
Yep.
This is just too much fun. Lynn in Melbourne, you're asking, Stephen, can you explain the difference between a spark line and a trend line? Now, visually, that's going to be easy if you've got the PDF to look through that. But, Stephen, can you put some words around that?
Yes. Well, technically, a trend line is that might appear, let's say, in a graph, is not a line that actually directly measures actual values. And so let's say that we're looking at sales over time. In a normal line graph, the values that you're encoding with the line are the actual sales values as they vary through time. Technically, the trend line would not be the actual values, but some kind of summarized version of the trend represented by those actual values. And so that's technically what a trend line is. Now, a spark line is a simplified version of a line that would normally appear in a line graph. And so a spark line is actually showing the true values, such as the sales values over time, not the trend of those values, but the actual values and how they change through time. So a trend line would not give you details in the data. It's just trying to summarize the kind of the overall trend of the data, as in this case, as it changes through time. Whereas both a spark line or a line in a line graph are showing the actual values as they change through time. The difference in a spark line is that it's a simplified version that does not have scales associated with it, no axes, and so forth. So you have no sense of magnitude in terms of the magnitudes of the changes from, let's say, month to month. You just have a sense of the pattern. Is it going up? Mm-hmm. Is it going down? By how much is it going up and down? But well, actually, no. By how much you can't tell. You can just kind of simply see the volatility.
Relatively.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the measurement of variation, the paying attention to the variation that's in the data is the key to understanding its patterns, and that's coming from my statistical side.
Right.
And page 23 in the PDF is where you'll see examples of spark lines accompanied by the bullet graphs, and in a really very effective layout indeed. Let's just take there still are a few more questions there, but I'm going to take just one more from Maury, who is sitting there at 3 o'clock in the morning in Finland.
Thank you, Maury.
He says he's not at his best right now.
Right.
Maury's question, for a new customer, this might be one for both of us, Stephen, now that I'm looking at it. For a new customer, how do you begin to define the right dashboard data to present?
Well, I think that really is a question that falls into your area of expertise, Stacey, and so I'm going to let you at least begin to tackle that one.
I think two things need to happen, possibly three things need to happen before you even go into the conversation about what will our dashboard be, what will it look like, how will we develop it. And the first one of those questions is, what are the specific results that are most important for your business or your area of the business to be monitoring and keeping your attention on and improving? So understanding those results first, and understanding a result is just understanding it in everyday language. You know, maybe it's we need to have a steady and consistent and growing influx of new leads or new customers, or maybe it's we just have to get our products out the door faster than our customers expect us to. Just wording the result like that is the first step. The second step is to look at each of those really important results and design the appropriate measures for them. And that's not about brainstorming. It is about looking at that result, understanding what it really means, and designing a measure that gives you the evidence of the extent to which that result is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second step. Third step is probably to take each of the measures that you have designed and flesh them out in enough detail that they become a specification to hand to the dashboard creation team, so they know exactly what data to source, where to get the data from, how to put the measure together, how to calculate it, how frequently to, you know, is it a weekly measure, a monthly measure, what kind of questions you're asking of the measure so that they can know what kind of graph to choose or what kind of display to use, who the users of the measure is so that they understand how to, whose dashboard to put the measure in, that kind of thing. So they're basically the three steps I would suggest. Know your results, design meaningful measures, and then flesh out the definition of each measure.
And there's not a thing I can add to that.
Oh, Stephen. It's probably because you're exhausted because I've grilled you for well over an hour.
But I'm less exhausted than Maury, who's listening at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Good point. Thank you, everyone who has submitted a question and for participating. I hope you've found this conversation today with Stephen as useful and as enjoyable as I have. The call recording will be available in a few days, and I will email you a link when it's ready. Stephen, it's been great to talk with you again. Thank you so much for gifting us your time and your practical pearls of wisdom about information dashboard design.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
Super. And I'm looking forward to sharing lots more practical performance measure ideas and tips with you in future teleseminars and webinars. but not until the new year. We're going to be taking a break over the holiday season, and I'll be heading off to the US in a couple of weeks and, yeah, taking a rest that I'm ready for over the Christmas time. But I will let you know as soon as I've got next year's plan up for the teleseminars. In the meantime, come visit me at www.stacebarr.com. Almost sounds like Mickey Mouse, M-I-C-K-E-Y. Anyway. But visit me at stacybarr.com. If you're not a subscriber already, you can sign up for my free twice-monthly email newsletter, Measurement Handy Hints, at www.mezhermnt.com. Don't try the traditional spelling of measurement because it won't work. Thanks for joining the call and the webinar today, everybody. Have a great day. Murray, you go back to bed and get some sleep, and I'll look forward to talking to you all again soon. Bye, everyone.